You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to yet another immortal episode of In Bed with Nick and Megan, the world-renowned number one podcast, busting all of the charts only in my mind. Starring Nick Offerman, featuring
what's up?
His wife, me, and special guest starring the luminous, powerful diva, Lena Waithe. Lena, you look like a kingpin in that lighting. I mean, you are a kingpin. Who am I kidding?
Okay.
But, you know, you look in the part. We're talking to Lena on Zoom, and she's got some very powerful, dramatic backlighting happening.
I know.
Looks pretty cool.
I know. I'm a turnaround. I'm going to figure this out.
Well, I like it.
I like seeing
your face, though. So whatever you want to do.
I know.
Because that's a good face.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Lena. So you guys know Lena from lots of things, many, many things, because she's a power player. She's kicking ass and taking names, as they used to say back in the day. You know, the first thing you guys might know her from is Master of None, that amazing show.
Whoop.
One of my all-time favorites. And so, Lena, you were on it, but then you also were the first Black woman to win an Emmy for writing, which is so fucking cool.
For outstanding writing in a comedy series.
Okay. All right, good. Got it. Clarification.
Which is, that was very much an honor for me because of how much I love half-hour television. And I grew up on multicams. So that was a different kind of rhythm, you know, but also too, like multicams is what ruled everything for a while. I mean, I studied the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I studied Rhoda, All in the Family, Maude, things like that. And then all the way up to obviously Friends and Will and Grace, but it really shifted, you know, with 30 Rock. And that happened when I was living in LA. So it was all of a sudden, everything I knew changed. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, okay, this is new. This is different. And it was this new way. Not that it was like new, but it was different from what we all knew. And so I kind of had to learn a new language. But I wrote a spec script for 30 Rock. People that don't know what that is, that's where you write a script of a show as if you're on the show, even though you're
not. It's like your audition, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's a way to show people that you can mimic someone's voice. And that 30 Rock spec got me a lot of attention and got people sort of talking about me. And I think it was because it was a new way of speaking for half hour television. And then obviously fast forward to me being on a show like Master of None, which is absolutely a descendant of 30 Rock.
How'd you meet Aziz? How did that all get started? I never even asked you that.
I honestly met him in a very interesting audition process. he, Allison Jones changed my life. She cast
that. Nick too, because she cast Parks and Rec. Yeah.
Allison Jones. Raise
we
a glass.
Love Allison. Yeah.
She actually sort of like beckoned me. She saw this thing I had done on YouTube, which was a presentation for what ultimately became 20s, which I'm not in. But for some reason, she said, I want to meet the girl behind this. Who was behind this? And so I went to go meet her. I didn't know who she was because I didn't know casting directors. But then, of course, my then manager was like, well, she's like a famous one. Like, she like cast Freaks and Geeks. I was like, what? Bridesmaid? I was like, oh, shit. Okay, you hit me with two crazy credits. So I just went in to meet with her. And she asked me, she's like, have you ever considered being in front of the camera? And I was like, no, I have not. Like, I'm trying to be a television writer. I'm like, I want to be like one of the greats, one of the half-hour television writers. She's like, okay. So let me bring you up for some stuff, just anyway. And I was like, okay. And so she did. She brought me in for some stuff, and I booked a small part on second season of The Comeback, which was like one of my favorite shows. And Patrick King and Lisa Kudrow, those geniuses. I was sort of like played a super small part on an episode on that show, and she brought me in. I read with Julia Louis-Dreyfus for like a character on Veep, which I didn't get, but it was a crazy experience. And then next thing I knew, when she came on to cast Aziz's show, he kind of went with the thing of, I want to meet interesting people and have conversations. Mm-hmm. And then if I like them, then I want to audition them. So my first meeting with Aziz was me going to his house and sitting with him and talking to him.
That's how we first met, remember?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You came over. I wanted to pitch you something. You came over.
That's right.
And I opened the door and you were coming up the driveway and I was like, wow, I already like this person. You have so much personal power and you're so charismatic.
Oh, thank you.
I used to call it swag.
Right. That's cool. Is that what the kids call it?
Yeah.
Well, luckily when Aziz asked Allison, like, hey, send me some interesting people, she just, by the grace of God, said, well, then you should meet Lena Waithe. And so I went to his house and I sat with him and Alan Yang, who's also the co-creator. Mm,
who worked on Parks and Rec,
the writer on Parks and Rec. And obviously, that's how Alan and Aziz became, you know, close friends. And I think just kind of realized they had very similar sensibilities in terms of comedy and like what they wanted to do. And also, I'm obsessed with Parks and Rec, loved it, loved Aziz on it, obviously loved you in it. And I think, there are limitations when you're on a network show. And even though Parks took so many chances and also really changed the game in terms of comedy and taking risks, I think Aziz and Alan knew they wanted to take more risks. And so they did. They set out and created this show that they didn't even have a name or title for yet, classic Aziz and Alan. And so it was just like the Aziz Ansari show. That's all I knew. And I went and sat with him. I sat with him and Alan for like 30 minutes. They were like, 30 minutes, we'll sit and have a conversation. And because I was used to going out for staff meetings, that's really what it felt like. It felt like I was in a staff meeting, which is pretty much when you have your little bio pitch and you kind of try to be funny and you talk about your script and this and that. But the only difference was they hadn't read a script. I was the script. They were just meeting me and I just was myself. I talked about all the things I was experiencing, what I was like, this little stuff about me. And I got a call that he wanted to read with me. And I went in, and because I'm a writer, I said, hey, can I punch this up? Can I? He's like, what?
Okay, that's sure. You.
So and he's like, yeah. He's like, sure. And so when I read with Aziz, I was saying lines to him that he wasn't prepared for. So he was laughing. He was like, he was like laughing with me. Alan was laughing. Allison was laughing. So I was like, okay, this is like going well. And but from the minute, and you guys know this, obviously being in television and working with other actors, the chemistry is a thing you can't create, you can't fake it, you can't force it. And Aziz and I, for some crazy reason, because we could not be further apart, seemed to be more different, but we just kind of sat down and just sort of started clicking immediately. It just made sense. And he did a really cool thing when it came for the test part of it, where people don't know, when you test for a show, it's basically like getting the powers that be, the studio and the network to approve.
The bankers,
because even
yeah.
if the even if the creatives obviously want you and like you, they have to get the people that pay the bills to just go look at the tape and go, okay, yeah, we're in agreement. Mm-hmm. So I have to go in for a test, and I didn't even do a test. I didn't know what a test deal was. This is all new to me. So I'm sitting with so I go in, and the other woman testing with me is this like lily white, straight as a board, like woman.
It was me.
And I'm like, oh,
you
yeah,
can just say it was me.
That's, That's how we met.
So not I'm straight like, anymore. Yeah,
exactly. Spaghetti's straight too before it gets wet. So anyway, are you reading for Denise? She's like, yeah, you're reading for Denise. So we were like confused. But afterward, I realized, I think Aziz was trying to make a point. I think he was like, if this was 1994, this would be Denise. But it's not. Like, this is a new day. And this girl should be my sidekick. But he, to his credit, the character Denise was supposed to be a potential love interest for him. And like the girl of the group. And he, you know, said, he was like, I just like you better and we'll make you a lesbian and I'll figure out the love interest thing later.
Oh, that's cool.
Back and rewrote. You know, all those 10 episodes, him and Alan to fit the character, to fit to me, and the rest is history. And I love that story because that happened so many times. Like, I know Ted Knight, who played Ted Baxter on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, he was supposed to be this tall, dark, and handsome guy that was supposed to be a potential love interest for Mary as well. But obviously, when Ted Knight walks into the room, you let Ted Knight be a clown. And that's why Ted Baxter was sort of this, like, character, but he was supposed to be a love interest for Mary.
I never even heard that.
And then what was his great show where he was a cartoonist in San Francisco?
You know, remember? Oh,
that's great. I love that we come to Lena Waithe to get sitcom history,
the backstory behind the scenes. I know you're good at that, but you know, that's funny because you and I were texting and. You were getting ready to go to London to shoot something, and I was going to be over there because Nick was going to be on tour, and I was going with them. And then everything went on lockdown, and now you're not in London, and neither am I.
I know.
I was so looking forward to that.
Planted. I know. Me too. I mean, and I've been texting with Aziz and FaceTiming with Aziz a lot lately. So it's just like I think a lot of people's projects that they were excited about, you know, they had to sort of take a pause, but it's sort of given people time to, I think, reflect and work on other things. But it was such a crazy thing. Like, we were all moving and had plans and things that we were going to do, and everything just sort of literally came to a screeching halt. But yeah, I was actually about to get on a plane like that day, and my agent called and said, yeah,
that day
NBC Universal is going to be liable. So
on the day. Okay. Yeah. Well, you and I hit it off right away. I think it's safe to say.
Of course.
Yeah. We like to do a little gossiping, which we won't do here.
No, of course not.
If we can, I don't know if we can restrain ourselves though.
Well,
a little bit might slip out just by accident.
We won't do any more. We already got that Ted Knight bombshell dropped on us a minute ago.
Hot goss.
That's the kind of gossip I'm going to give you.
The hottest of goss.
So I was a little late to the, Nick and I were a little late seeing it, but we saw Queen and Slim, and I told you that we just loved it. I loved your, Lena wrote the screenplay to the movie Queen and Slim. I just loved it, and I just wanted to ask you about it because we didn't get to talk about, you know, how you got the idea for that and how that came about, because it's such a beautiful movie. I just really, really, I thought it was one of my favorites of the year.
Agreed.
For sure.
Thank you.
And I got, should have gotten more awards attention for that movie. I'm mad.
Well, look, I appreciate that. But the funny thing was, when I was writing it, that could not have been further, I think, from my mind. You know, it was a story that I felt like I really had to tell. And the way the log line for it came to me is so crazy. I was at a party, like the Hollywood Reporter, and James Frey came up to me. God, a lot of people know him. He wrote A Million Little Pieces.
He got in trouble with Oprah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He did, but he's since, I think, you know, come out of that, you know, area. But, you know, but that's how I knew him. You know, he came up to me and introduced himself. And I said, yeah, I know who you are. And he was like, yo, I got this idea for a movie that I can't write because I'm a straight white guy. And so I was like, okay, well, what's the idea? And he was like, you know, black man, black woman on a first date, not going great, not going horribly. They're on their way home. A police officer pulls them over. Things get heated. They kill him in self-defense. And rather than calling the police, they decide to get in the car and run. And I remember thinking, yeah, you shouldn't tell that story. But like, it's interesting. And I'm sure in Hollywood, you know how you talk to people at a party and you never see them again. He probably was surprised that, like, I was like, no, give me your email. And like, I was like, I emailed them, and like, we just stayed in contact. And I said to him, I said, he had a a title. He had like an outline just to kind of get the idea out. And I said, I don't want the title. I don't want the outline. I just want that idea. And I can take that. And I know what that movie is. And it took me a while to kind of even figure out what I would call it, but it ultimately became Queen and Slim. And there are, I'll give spoilers here. So no, if you haven't seen it yet, press pause and go watch it. But I knew I want the characters' names to be revealed until they were killed, because I find that with a lot of Black people, we don't know their names unless a police officer kills them. Like Sandra Bland, like Mike Brown, like, you know, Trayvon Martin, and things like that. Trayvon Martin was not killed by a police officer. He was killed by a vigilante in his father's neighborhood, which is even worse. Just like a citizen who didn't trust him being there and, like, you know, killed him. And so the truth is, it was really a story about a bit of a metaphor for what it's like to be a Black person in the world, to always be defending yourself, to always sort of still being on the run, always sort of looking for freedom wherever you can find it. And it is odd, I think, for that story to come from me, because you are talking to a woman who really studied, you know, comedy television, and that people that watch the film can see my comedic side come out wherever I can. I try to find places of brevity, you know, levity. So, but that's the thing about my voice, is it feels like a muscle that I'm always trying to work, and I'm always trying to stretch, and I'm always trying to see where it's weak, where it's weak, where it's strong. And Queen of Slim was a really beautiful exercise for me to tell.
And I like story. How lyrical the movie is too. And how, I can't think of the director's name, the woman who directed
Elena,
it. How did you?
Elena Matsoukas.
Yeah. She's really, really good.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
Did you know her before?
I did. Well, she directed the Thanksgiving episode. Which we got the Emmy for, and she and I bonded over the course of that episode. And I think oftentimes in television, with television directors, you have a different director all the time. Like your connection is really more to the writers in television, more so than the directors. Although Megan, your experience is very different. Oh, great, because obviously you had the same director, which is also very rare in television. Yeah. So we had different directors, obviously, on Master of None. But I knew for that episode, the Thanksgiving episode, I wanted Melina, and so did Aziz, because of just her body of work, and she was so talented. So she came and directed the episode, and she and I just bonded over the course of that time. And I remember talking to her about the script at that time. I wasn't finished with it, but I was like, yo, I got this movie, you know, I want you to direct it. She's like, okay, we'll see. So when I finished it, you know, I just knew she was the person. And she had never directed a feature before, but everybody was so excited about her. I mean, because she's most known for directing Beyonce videos. She did Insecure. And then obviously she became known for the Thanksgiving episode, and everybody was on her heels. Like, when are you going to do a movie? People were starting to ask me if I wanted to write a feature as well. So it wasn't even about trying to get hype. I just bonded with this woman, and I knew she was the person I wanted to do my first feature with. So she read it and agreed to do it, and it changed everything. And Daniel Kaluuya read it before Melina. He and I had a dinner just hanging out, and he was like, what are you working on? He's amazing. And I told him, and he said, I'll have to read that. And he said, he's like, not even, he wasn't angling to be in it. He said, I just want to read it because I'm a fan of your voice. I was like, okay. I sent it to him. It was a very early draft. And like literally 2 days later, he emailed me and said, I have to be Slim. And I said, Melina has to read it first and see if she wants to direct it. And if she chooses to direct it, then who Queen and Slim are will have to be a conversation between she and I. And he said, okay, I'll wait. Then he did. He waited a few months.
God, that's cool.
And that's how we became like Three the Hard Way. And then our mission was to go out and find Queen, which we did, Jodie Turner Smith, who was amazing.
So good. Yeah, both of them were so amazing. And, you know, the whole movie kind of rides on them being as great as they were.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what's so funny to me is I don't remember when I met you, but it was not very long. It was maybe, I don't know, a couple months before you won the Emmy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you were doing your thing and all of that, but then I swear to God, like, I turn around and you know every person in Hollywood. You're on the cover of 15 magazines, like 4,000 photo shoots. Everybody's like, Lena Waithe, the greatest person that ever lived. I was like, okay, well, that was fast.
When
you got it, you got it.
But that's also, I was very grateful for that opportunity. And I think that's the interesting thing about our industry is awards and award season and what it means. And it's exhausting. It's crazy. Like if anyone's ever been on an Emmy campaign, it is exactly that, or Oscar campaign or whatever it may be. it is a campaign. Like, you are really out there, like, doing panels, doing parties. And Netflix is, I mean, they're great at it. They can, like, they will figure it out. And they kind of know when they have something. I mean, there were whispers about the Thanksgiving episode very early, like, before we even, before it even came out. And so I was sort of hearing that, but I never thought anything of it. And it's crazy because as much as I love television, writing television, that wasn't a focus. It wasn't like, oh, one day I want to win an Emmy. I think for me, looking at, you know, the Norman Lears of the world and Jenny Bix and Michael Patrick King, I just wanted to be considered, you know, one of the greats. You know, I really wanted to be respected as a comedy writer. But that was it. I really wanted the respect of my peers, you know, and also Max Muchnick and Marta Kaufman and, you know, David Crane, all these guys, like these people that are gonna forever be in the Hall of Fame. I think of, you know, television comedy writing. I wanted someone to consider me to be, you know, be able to say my name in the same sense as theirs. So that's why.
But I feel like you're more of a recognizable name already than any of the people that you just mentioned. And it's been like 2 years. I mean, it's really fast. Okay. Maybe three.
Those are my heroes. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like those people I look to. And so, but that's why it is interesting for me, because I think the Emmy obviously also, it just put a lot of eyeballs on me. And I think the speech kind of meant something to people. But I also knew that I would be a first if I won. And so I didn't take that lightly. And I also didn't want to be the last. You know, I was very grateful that this amazing writer, her name is Stephanie, who was a writer in Atlanta, was nominated for her episode of an episode called Barbershop the year after, which to me was very important because black women are in comedy rooms as well.
Another great show.
In there, you know, trying to pitch and trying to get our jokes in, trying to get our jokes off. It's very competitive.
You know, but I think there's another element of it that maybe, you know, you don't see as clearly, but you as a person, you're such a bright light to be around as a person. Like, I genuinely really liked you from the beginning, and you have some kind of, like I said, you're very charismatic, but you're friendly. And you're, you know, you're present when you talk to people. And I think that there's something to be said for that, because I don't think that you can just like win an Emmy and then all of a sudden, like, you know, you make the kind of inroads that you've made. I think there's something else to it. I think it's that people genuinely like you as a person. They're drawn to you and they want to have you around.
Wow. Well, that's a huge compliment. And that means a lot, because I think particularly with people who are in television, really, like we all three of us are, you have to have that quality, you know, I found. And because I think people don't even sometimes realize why they like certain TV characters or what it is why they like a certain actor. It's because they represent something, you know, like I'm a big Mary Tyler Moore fan. You know, I'm trying to do a documentary about her, actually.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just you mentioned that. I forgot.
Yeah. I just got the book, I Wrote, you know, about what Harper wrote, just because like there was something, and I feel like you're in those lines with those ladies, you know, where there's something about you, you know, that makes people feel comfortable. Nick, there's something about you and Aziz and all those characters, Amy Poehler on Parks and Rec, that like, keeps me coming back, because it is the characters, but it's also the actors that embody those characters.
And well, you're very much who you are. You know, there's no artifice. You know, it's very clear from the minute that someone meets you, I think, that you're not trying to pretend to be something you're not.
true.
You're one of a kind.
Which is very interesting, because that has been something that has been a tad frustrating for me, because I am still a bit of an anomaly in terms of the fact that I'm a masculine presenting black lesbian woman. And I'm not alone. Like, you know, it's like you have, say, Samira Wiley, you know, who's on Orange is the New Black and Handmaid's Tale, who is happily married, and they're very public about that. And then Wanda Sykes, who's also happily married and has kids. But for me, you know, because I might be considered to be more masculine presenting than Samira, because I will never be seen on a red carpet in a dress. I just won't. Good luck. Mm-hmm. You know, so the thing is, but I'm not the only one, but I'm the only one, I think, that's unafraid to be this unapologetically in front of people. And so
well, you very much have your own style, you know.
True. Yeah. I mean, and And even like when I do photo shoots, like my team will say, like, don't try to put her in a dress. And I feel like that's, I don't know if that would have been okay maybe 5 years ago, maybe mm-hmm. 6 years ago, 10 years ago. Because there's, you know, there are still, I think there's that pressure, particularly for us when we're on these red carpets or at premieres, there's a pressure to, well, let's do a face and let's do this. And I'm just like, nah, I even stopped wearing makeup almost as protest. Cause I'm like, dudes don't gotta wear makeup. They don't gotta do all that stuff. So it's like, I'll just try to do my facialist, keep the skin right, so I don't have to wear makeup. Mm-hmm. You know, just because I'm a woman doesn't mean I want to have a, you know, a beat face all the time or to feminize me in some sort of way. So I think, but in essence, I almost get credit for that. But the truth is I'm just sort of putting my comfort level first. And I think that kind of sort of creates this thing where I've now also become a bit of a poster child for a community of people, which can really be tough because I'm still a person fumbling my way through life. And people have to watch me fumble and they got to watch me grow. And cause I also feel like I've kind of grown up in front of people too.
Yeah. Well, you know what though, during your Emmy speech was like the first time that people got to see what a powerful speaker you can be. You're great mm-hmm. at putting out the message and it's translated into your activism. And not, I mean, a lot of people are activists, but not everybody are good at getting a message across in a simple, just like me trying to finish the sentence, getting a message across in a simple way that's also quite powerful. So, you know, we were talking to Billy Porter and I was saying that he can preach. Well, I think you can preach, you know, you just can. And it's just something that people either have, they like, you have it or you don't. I think it's not something you really learn to do. And I think that's such a great thing in addition to your writing and, you know, you're producing and all of that, and you're acting, that you are able to speak so powerfully to, you know, you said you become sort of a poster child for some groups of people, and that's a big deal.
Yeah. And you know, it kind of comes with the territory, I think, when you're first at the brick wall. And in many ways, I'm not a first. In some ways, I am. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't easy for James Baldwin to be himself at a time. You know, it wasn't easy for Lorraine Hansberry to, you know, who we've now found out was queer. Even though she was married to a lovely man, she, you know, had to be an artist sort of first, and but also an activist as well. And I definitely try to study the history of particularly Black artists, sometimes more specifically Black queer artists. You kind of don't get just to be an artist. You kind of have to be an activist too. And it's a burden that my white counterparts don't always bear. Mm-hmm. Like, truth is like Quentin Tarantino has a very different role than Spike Lee. And it can be frustrating sometimes because I can't write Django Unchained. If I do that, I'm going to have a whole lot of problems mm-hmm. with Black people, but, you know, with white people, particularly with Black Twitter. But he's allowed to do that, you know, and that's fine. You know, he's allowed to express himself however he sees fit. But what people often forget is when you're a person of color, then also you have to be a queer person on top of that, and then you're a woman, you know, you have handcuffs on your hands when you're sitting at your laptop because you're thinking about, you know, the army of people, not just in front of you that are going to hopefully see this piece of work, but you got an army of people standing behind you, breathing down your neck, looking at the laptop, the screen going like, well, would a Black person do that? Well, you're not going to have a gay character in there. Well, she's too feminine to be gay or he's too masculine to be bisexual. It's like, there's so much that goes into it. So I think what I've been doing more recently is trying to silence the noise and just try to be as free of an artist as I can be, because that's the only way people will get something out of me that's actually interesting. But
the key to success for an artist. I mean, your uniqueness is what makes you special, and that's it.
Yeah. But Twitter sort of also, I think, changed Hollywood a little bit because, you know, showrunners are there. I'll be on there too, looking at what the audience is saying. You know, I know Shonda really kind of got into it where she would go back and forth with fans about characters and this and that. And
Shonda Rhimes.
Yeah, Shonda Rhimes. And it can be a slippery slope. Now, luckily, Shonda always says, look, it's still my show. I'm going to talk to y'all, but it's mine. But everyone has a microphone now. And, and the audience is more involved in our work than I think they've ever been before.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Nikki, do you want to get in on this action? Because we don't have Lena for too much longer, or I don't even want to think about it.
Well,
yeah, no.
I find that interesting that, that you know, you set an artistic course for yourself, and you had the opportunity for your talent to be rewarded in a way, you know. Those of us that are lucky enough to end up getting paid for working in this business, generally, you know, usually there's something substantial to what we do. We bring something to the table, but we also would be assholes if we didn't also admit that there's a great deal of luck involved. So you know, you've run into things have gone well, you know, where suddenly you're, and with good reason, you know, but everything has come together. And I think that's really interesting by expressing your true voice, the things that, you know, you want to tell the world from your experience. It is, I think, fascinating that in this day and age, it seems like an incredible minefield to become the poster child for these communities that, I mean, do you run into a lot of explosive blowback, you know? Do you have to shut those channels off at some point?
Oh, absolutely. You know, like Queen and Slim was like the first, I would say, big, like, punch to the jaw I think I got, as an artist, because also I experienced that cliche thing of where, like, I was the darling. Like, there was nothing but love. Like, I could be on Twitter all day. People were like, oh, I have to get off Twitter, man. Oh, Twitter is so toxic. I'm like, oh, what? I love it. It's great. Da, 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 da. You know, it was like a drug. And then Queen of Slim happened. And there's a thing that happens is, like, with familiarity breeds contempt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's a thing that people sometimes they get mad and they're like, well, because a lot of Black folks, I was like, didn't love the ending. They're like, why didn't they get to the, you know, we deserve a win, and Lena, come on, you da, da, da. And it was tough, man. And I was like, I took the bait in some places I didn't, you know, definitely got the call from the public, like, get off Twitter, da, 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 da. And it was difficult because that's when I really learned what it meant to be a Black artist, which that's is that it is difficult because my community will be tough. They are tough.
You know, I didn't know that controversy was happening, and I'm not 100% surprised, but I'm a little surprised just because I thought the ending was very powerful. And, you know, I mean, I know it's not intended to be, it's not, a recreation of Bonnie and Clyde, but there's an element of, know, these two, a man and a woman going out on the lam, and, you know, so yeah, that's interesting to know. I didn't know that. I don't think we were aware.
And that's the other thing too. So a lot of, like, I was getting calls from like high ups at like studios and places calling congratulations. Cause here's the crazy thing. I got a rave review from like A.L. Scott, like, which is like, what, how do you get that? Like
New York Times,
Carville Wallace and like, Jelani Cobb. I mean, just like phenomenal writers. One woman just wasn't even reviewing it. She was just like, for once I was surprised when going to the movie theater. She's like, I was surprised. Yeah. But she wasn't going to write a review. She just was like, I haven't been surprised in a long time. You know, she's, and it was just like a beautiful piece that she wrote, a white woman. And so, but then, you know, certain black blogs were like, well, it provided a problem, but no ointment. You know, it didn't give us this or that. And so there's nothing worse too as an artist than to be misunderstood.
Right.
For someone to not understand your intent.
That's the worst
because
feeling.
My intent was to show that black life is often more celebrated in black death. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it be Martin Luther King and Malcolm X or fast forward all the way to Tupac and Biggie, you know, it's like we celebrate them more because they died, you know, in untimely deaths. But oftentimes black death causes the black community to wake up, whether it be Emmett Till, fast forward all the way to Trayvon Martin. And so that's really what I was trying to say, is that we should appreciate our bodies while we still have air in our lungs. But sometimes, you know, you can't go sit by everybody and explain that. And also I learned people don't have control over how people receive our art. Well.
Yeah, you can't please all the people all the time is what it boils down to. And I wouldn't take it to heart in any way. I mean, I completely get where you were coming from. And that's what I felt watching it. And that's part of the reason I loved it so much. And I thought it was so powerful. I mean, it would have been nice if things had gone another way, just because that's always nice.
Sure.
But, you know, the way that the violence that's done against people of color in this country is absolutely, it makes me sick to my stomach. And so I think that not shying away from that is the way, you know, for me as a white person who doesn't know anything about anything, is the way to go, because it just gets that message out there more and more people who go to the movies, they take their, you know, their date, they only have a date night and they go see this and they're like, maybe that opens and brings a little more awareness. Maybe that opens people's eyes a little bit more.
I mean, that's my hope. Yeah. And also too, you know, I've learned, because when I was going through that, I was doing a lot of reading. I was doing a lot of soul searching and all that kind of stuff. And I was doing some research on Lorraine Hansberry for something else. And I found how some people have misunderstood A Raisin in the Sun. Not to say that Queen of Slim is at that level at all, but it just kind of, but for me, I just think, well, Raising the Sun is the most perfect piece of, you know, writing that ever exists. And like that Mary Baraka had taken out like a full page ad, like talking about how it didn't, you know, reflect the black experience. And then he later on went on to retract that. Mm-hmm. And I think Baldwin did a rebuttal about saying how, no, it is about the black experience. So the truth is, like, I think art is meant to be debated. And that's really where I landed. I landed there, and I also landed that when we birth something creative, we have to give it up and not, it's hard not to care what people think because you want people to like your work, but you can't let that affect you or else you'll make passive and safe art and nobody. Well,
yeah, I think kind of in a weird way, it's a badge of honor. I mean, well, it's not even in a weird way. It's a badge of honor. You know, you can't make great art without large groups of people oftentimes think, you know, trying to run you down. I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, there's so many people who will never even be appreciated until after they're gone. But
absolutely,
great art is not, I mean, the better the art, the the more that happens in many cases, not in all, but in many, you know.
What
were you saying? I interrupted my sweet husband.
That's the pitfall, is that if you don't, you know, that's your challenge, is to stay true to what you want to make, because, and like you said, everybody has a microphone these days. And if you give them enough credence, if you give them any weight, like Shonda Rhimes has it's great to say, I'm interested in what you have to say, but then I'm going to go away and do whatever the hell I want to because it's my art. Because otherwise, when you sit down at the keyboard or the, you know, sit down at your painting or whatever your art is, you're asking yourself, oh, is this going to upset a certain right. community? Like, what are the, all those people that complained about my last thing? How are they going to, like, should I pacify? Like, you shouldn't. Oh, yeah. And that's the pitfall, is like not letting them into your process.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, that is a part of the work now every day. It's just to silence, you know, to be sensitive. Sure. I think as artists, we can do that because what we do is very powerful, but at the same Absolutely. Time, we have to have intentionality. And I think the great artists do, as long as there's some intent behind it. I think you can stand to argue or not argue with whoever likes it or doesn't like it.
And like Megan said, you're creating a debate, you're creating a conversation. Huh? And so ultimately, even if some people leave with smoke coming out their ears, you can consider yourself a great success. And that's in this house, you will always be the darling.
Oh, and thank you.
My girlfriend. Perfect. Nick, I feel like it's time to tell you that Lena is my secret girlfriend. Oh, just a little bit.
You're great at picking
just
things.
A little
Honey,
bit.
You're great
it
at
doesn't matter.
Things.
Don't worry about it.
As long as Nick's cool, it's fine. I respect him too much. I respect him too much.
I've had a good long turn.
Yeah, he's had, listen, he's been all over every square inch of this thing.
I've ridden every critter on this merry-go-round.
Let somebody else have a turn.
It's your turn to ride this ride. It's all enough.
Oh, man, I'm so glad you could come on the podcast, Lena.
I'm sorry,
oh, my gosh.
In the pandemic, I mean, it's so crazy, but I'm so happy. It's happening, you know.
I know. And maybe next week, we'll figure that out later. But I still want to do a FaceTime with.
Yeah. That'd be great. I know you're doing something else. You're doing another party, I think.
Yeah, that's cool. Sorry. So, dear listener, thank you so much for lending an ear to another episode of In Bed with Nick and Megan. And thank you, Lena. Lena Waith.
Thank you, Nick.
Good night.
Thank you, Lena.
I love you both.
Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Capella University is rethinking higher education. With their game-changing FlexPath format, you can earn your degree on your schedule, so you can fit education seamlessly into your life. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.